Would you please turn your Bibles to the book of Revelation? We're continuing a study in that book of blessing. It is identified in the first chapter. And I'd like for you to be turning to the 12th chapter. And as you do so, I'll just say this by way of introduction. I know that everybody here knows that there's a crisis that is ongoing in the world. It is a crisis that has been ongoing ever since mankind sinned. And it is a crisis that has been called a war by many. Some say it's a political war. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican or an independent or whatever, you know, some think that if one side will gain supremacy over the other, then maybe this conflict will somehow be resolved. Others say this is a cultural war. And so the various elements of culture struggle for supremacy. And some think that if a particular cultural viewpoint can hold sway within the world, that then this conflict will be brought to an end. Still others say, no, this is a philosophical war. It's a war of ideas. And if an idea can gain prominence and gain acceptance, then the conflict will be resolved. But it is, in truth, not a political war or a cultural war or a philosophical war. It is, in truth, a spiritual war. And the Bible portrays a conflict ongoing since sin entered this world that is of a spiritual nature. And we're not going to win in this war. We're not even going to understand the war until the enemy is exposed. Until we understand what the power is, or who the power is, that is behind the various influences that wreak havoc upon this world. I mean, what do you think is behind pornography? What do you think is behind drug cartels? What do you think is behind abuse? What do you think is behind thievery? I think you find in all of those a common thread, and that is, of course, the one who is identified in the Scriptures as the prince of this world. Now, no doubt you know that the Christians of John, the Apostle's day, were involved in this conflict, and they were living under an adversarial government in Rome. But John looks right past that government, that seat of government, and looks to the real power behind the throne. The real power that was exercising influence through that governmental power. And he portrays here in Revelation chapter 12 the one who was really behind the throne. And I want to, in our abbreviated study this evening, just introduce to you three characters that are identified in this 12th chapter that will be at the center of the remaining part of this book. Chapter 12 actually marks a new section in the book of Revelation. The first 11 chapters, we have noted in a very general way, there's been described this ongoing conflict between good and evil, and we have heaven's response and how that response from God and His judgment against evil and the forces of evil is poured out upon the earth. And those first 11 chapters gave us some pretty graphic depictions of God acting against evil. And it was all intended to encourage the brethren, those who are in Christ, that they would know that they were not involved in a hopeless cause, that they were not going to be overwhelmed and eradicated. Though they would suffer hardships, though there would be difficulties, nonetheless, they were assured that they would, in the end, be victorious. Well, with chapter 12, we have a movement into a new section, Act 2, if you will, of this portrayal, that in many ways is a retelling of those first 11 chapters, but with much more specific kinds of descriptions of who is involved in all of this. And so I want to put before you this evening these three main characters that we find in chapter 12. And we're going to talk about the woman, the dragon, and the child. For those are the three characters that in this very symbolic portrayal, John has put before him their involvement in this great struggle that goes on between good and evil. Let's look, first of all, at the dragon. Look, if you would, we'll read the first four verses together. He says that a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars, as she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain, to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads were 7 diadems, and his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. Now here are these three characters plainly put before us. But I want you to notice, consistent with the writing of this book, John says he has seen a sign. This is not describing some time when some great red dragon swept his tail across the sky and removed a third of the stars from the heavens as he waited to devour the child that a woman was about to give birth to. These were all symbols. They were signs that John saw and that he was directed to write. Now, let's talk about this dragon to begin with. What is he saying about this dragon, this sign that he sees? Well, there's really no question about this, for we have, as I said, more specifications given to us in this section of the book. Verse 9, he says very plainly, the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth. His angels were thrown down with him. Now that's another part of this of the story that we'll be looking at. But just notice there's a clear identification of who we're talking about when we're told there was this great red dragon that John saw. It's the devil. And he awaits the opportunity to do what he has always done, and that is to wreak destruction and to do so by deception. His motive is to destroy. Jesus said he is a murderer. And his method is by deception. Jesus said not only is he a murderer, but he said that he is a liar. He is the father of all lies. When he speaks of his own. The truth is not in him. So you see, here we find consistent with what the Bible says, this description of the devil. Now I want you to notice what he seeks to do. He seeks to destroy the child. Verse 4, as we've read, he awaits the birth of this child in order to devour the child. The next thing that we see about him in this chapter is, consistent with his character, he acts by deception. As you drop down to verse 9, there, as we just read, it says that he is the serpent of old who is called the devil, who deceives the whole world. I'll tell you, when you listen to the devil, you are getting a line. You're being fed a line. You're being deceived. It doesn't matter how good it might appear, how good it might sound, how pleasing it might be to accept what's being said. If it comes from him, it is deception. But not only is he attributed here to be a murderer and a deceiver, he's also called an accuser. In verse 10, it says that I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power, the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, he who accuses them before our God day and night. He is a slanderer. He is a false accuser. You know, it's one of the interesting things in the Bible when you see in the book of Job a description of what Satan was doing, what does he say to God about Job? He says, well, Job serves you because it's profitable. You've built a hedge around him. He slanders Job before God. Now, he slanders God before men when we're introduced to the devil in the book of Genesis. What is he doing as he deceives Eve? He tells Eve, well, God just wants to withhold good things from you. He is a slanderer. He is a false accuser, both of God and of men. But here we see him being one who is the accuser of brethren. And then finally, in verse 13, it is said of him that he is a persecutor. When the dragon saw that he was thrown down, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Now that's who we're talking about. When we talk about the dragon, it is the devil. And we're going to see in following chapters the activity of this one to wreak havoc among the people of God. But now there's another character that is spoken of in this chapter, and that is the woman, as we read in verses 1 and 2. She is gloriously arrayed. She is clothed with the sun, the moon under her feet. On her head is a crown of 12 stars. But we see that she is also described by these various qualities. She is, first of all, a pregnant woman. She is about to give birth. Verse 1. Verse 13, as we've read, she is also described as a persecuted woman, persecuted by the devil. But yet she is also described in this chapter as a protected woman. Look at verse 6. The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she would be nourished for 1,260 days. But not only is she a protected woman, she is also a persevering woman. Look at verse 17. So the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. Now here we have these qualities of this woman. Who is she? Well, perhaps it would be helpful for us to look at the third character in this chapter before we answer that question. And that's the child. Verses 5 and 6. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. Then the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she would be nourished for 1,260 days. We see the child introduced here. And it is the child who is the object of Satan's attention, the desire to destroy this child. This child is a child who is described as one who rules. He rules the nation, verse 5 declares. And furthermore, he is a child that is described as one who is caught up to the throne of God. Now, there is only one other individual named in this chapter, down in verse 10. When the text says that salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of His Christ have come. I want to suggest to you that here is the identity of this one, this child. The child who will rule among the nations. Who is it that is going to exert God's rule over mankind? Well, it is within God's plan that His Son, Jesus Christ, was going to exert that rule. His kingdom was to be established among men, and Jesus was the one who is the king. He rules. But notice also that this fifth verse is consistent with what the Bible tells us about Jesus, and that is that after He had finished His work upon this earth, what did He do? He ascended back into heaven. There He was with God, His Father, and He went to the throne. Notice verse 5, I think is very important. He was caught up to God and to His throne. Remember back in Revelation chapter 4 and verse 5 when we were introduced to the Lamb? the Son of God, the one identified as Jesus? Where is He? Oh, He's in heaven. Yes, He's in heaven. All right. Well, He's in the presence of God. Yes, He's in the presence of God, His Father. But Revelation chapter 4 and chapter 5 both depict for us that Jesus sharing the throne of His Father. He is at the throne. He is on the throne. He occupies the throne with His Father. And that's the picture here in verse 5. And for those reasons, I would suggest to you that here is what we are having introduced to us to help us enter into this second stage of our study of Revelation. Three key characters. Christ, the child. Satan, the avowed enemy of Christ who has sought to destroy Him at every turn, even at His birth. Do you remember the story of Jesus' birth? What did Herod try to do? He tried to kill Him. He tried to put the child, Jesus, to death. Now, who do you think was behind Herod's throne? Who do you think was driving those desires? At every turn. And it seemed as though Satan had achieved his purposes when at the cross he was finally put to death. But as I spoke to you about this morning, that which was man's worst efforts were God's best efforts on man's behalf. For the cross was not the victory of Satan, the cross was the defeat of Satan. For Jesus dying then arose, conquered death, conquered the devil, ascended back to His Father, and there shares the throne. But now, who then does this mean the woman is? We might be inclined to say, well, the woman must then be Mary, the mother of Jesus. But I would suggest to you that that's not so. That this passage actually portrays this one who brings the Messiah into the world as the righteous remnant that we oftentimes read about in the Old Testament Scriptures. Those people who were living in accord with God's will through those days of the Old Testament period, who were abiding faithfully with God, serving Him as they could and as they should. These were the ones through whom God worked. The ones through whom the nation of Israel was preserved. The ones through whom the Messiah could come. But the picture changes somewhat, as we've read in this passage, so that after the birth of the child, what happens to the woman? Does she just pass from the scene? Is she no longer of any importance? No. She continues on. She flees in verse 6 into the wilderness, protected there for a period of time. As you drop on down into the latter part of the chapter, we see still again she is involved in this story. Verse 14, two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman so that she could fly into the wilderness to her place where she was nourished for a time and times and a half a time from the presence of the serpent. And then as you drop down still further in verse 17, the dragon was enraged with the woman, went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. Here is who I believe this woman is. It is the righteous of God throughout time. The righteous through whom God worked to bring the Messiah into this world. But even after He has served His purposes here and ascended back to His Father, there still remains a righteous remnant present upon the earth. They are the people of Christ. They are those who follow the Lord. They are those who keep the commandment of Jesus, verse 17 tells us. It is the righteous remnant that brings the Messiah into the world in a figurative way, and the righteous remnant that continues to serve Him. And these are the three main characters for the rest of the story. The Christ who rules from heaven, the righteous remnant who serve Him upon the earth, and the devil devoted to their destruction. The conflict that is against evil is seen in this part of the book as part of a greater spiritual battle that you and I are involved in. And may I conclude with just this observation? Do you want to know how to fight the battle? Do you want to know how to win? Do you want to know how to remain a part of this righteous remnant? We're given the instructions about this in verse 11, where it is said concerning these ones who remain faithful in their service to Christ, even in the face of stiff opposition, they overcame him. That is, they overcame the devil. They overcame him by three things: by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of the testimony, and they did not love their life, even when faced with death. There's the answer. That's how to fight this battle. That's how to be a part of the victory. By reliance upon the blood of the Lamb, you and I cannot be saved apart from the sacrifice of Jesus. And being cleansed by the blood of the Lamb, then the word of our testimony, we must be willing to bear the message of the Lamb. And thirdly, even at the cost of physical life, we must be willing to remain true to the Lord. And if we'll do that, then we too will be able to overcome the one who is determined to achieve our destruction. Are you seeking to overcome him? Or do you follow him? One of the interesting things that Jesus says in the course of his teachings is that we are either of God, our Father, or we are of the devil, our Father. There are only two sides. We choose. Which side do you stand with in this great struggle tonight? If you would be aligned with the Lord, it will be by the blood of the Lamb, then by the word of your testimony, and by not loving your life, even in the face of death. Will you give that devotion to Him? Will you give your obedience to Him tonight? Will you come to Him as we stand and sing?